I arrived home about 5 days later than I was supposed to. And I found that my company had found out about my carryings on. My stepfather had found that what he thought was an accumulation of a little nest egg through his 9 years of sobriety had been channeled in my direction. He wasn't happy. And my wife had decided that she could take no more. And then there were a few sheriffs that were making inquiries about where I might be found. But you know, us alcoholics always could connive. And I asked my wife, if I go to AA, will you stay? Or it was the other way around. Can I stay? And she agreed. I believe I would have joined the WCTU under those terms. Now, there's an easier way to come into AA than there was in July of 1954, especially in Kansas, when the temperature is 116 degrees. But when one is bankrupt, as I was, more bankrupt than just financial, I was bankrupt physically, mentally, and spiritually. And time was precious. And thank God another day wasn't allowed to pass. My sponsor, God love him, braved that heat that day, and he came to see me. And he brought me the message. Now picture, if you will, this man of distinction. Stripped to the waist, in a faded, torn pair of GI shorts, because you see, I thought it never occurred to me to buy any clothes since I got out of the Army, because that clothes took money. I was sitting in this easy chair with a wash tub full of ice in front of it, with an electric fan behind that ice and the fan blowing across to give a cooling effect. Beautiful picture of the man of distinction. Unshaven, emaciated, dehydrated, sweating, stinking, and shaking as if I was ready to go in orbit. My sponsor talked to me for quite a long while. And until this day, I can only remember one thing that he told me. And may I never forget it. He said, no matter how big your troubles are, they will not be lessened by taking a drink. Try if you can to put the past behind you and live just this 24 hours. It may be all that you have. I attended my first meeting that night and began to make the daily contact with other AA members in the group. But the self-pity, the resentments, and the remorse were eating me up. My dry days were just that. Nothing like the sober ones we are privileged to enjoy today. The sleepless nights and the pain, real and imaginative, were driving me insane. When I was finally prevailed upon to go to a doctor, by this time, I had dwindled to 122 pounds. Things had changed. After taking tests, he described my condition as acute alcoholism, coupled with alcoholic neuritis, and thirdly, uncontrolled diabetes. He told my wife since that he never thought I'd make it. It then became my daily chore to walk 2 blocks to the doctor's office. The idea being to put circulation in my legs so that they would not have to amputate. I took this cure for 3 months. And while I was taking the daily trip, I didn't have a pleasant word for anybody, nor did I think or care for a soul but myself. Finally, one day, out of disgust, his doctor said to me, "Fred, why don't you start living that program that organization that you belong to tells you to? Why don't you practice what's in that third step?" Imagine a non-alcoholic doctor telling me how to practice the 12th step. I was rightfully mad. But then I thought, and perhaps he's right. And I took step 4, and I knew he was right. That night I took step 3 for the first time. I hadn't slept in all these 3 months other than catnap. I asked God to help me. And believe it, ladies and gentlemen, in 10 minutes I was asleep and I never woke up until the next morning. That was my first spiritual experience. And I've been having them ever since. The little simple things of everyday living, they to me are spiritual experiences. A spontaneous laugh. Oh, how many years did I go without laughing? The joy of seeing others happy. To share in their good fortune. How different from the self-centered existence of other years. The peace of mind and the serenity that cannot help but be ours by trying to work our 12 steps every day. God is good to us in AA. He has performed one of his miracles on each and every one of us. How can we fail with him there to help us with the letter? I know. Because during this past year, our daughter married the one of her choice. I know that she had dreamed of her wedding day all her life. All girls do, I'm told. I know that she must have been apprehensive in the past about a drunken father giving her away. But last December, as we walked down the aisle arm in arm, I was no more proud of her than she was of me. Miracles? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, God's miracles. Now, as I mentioned before, my stepfather had been in AA 9 years when I finally came. He had made no mention of my new way of life until I received the letter. And he asked me to read an article that was coming out in the July Grapevine. And with your permission, I would like to share a portion of that with you this morning. This is July of 1957. And the article, the words kept coming back, but I'll just read this portion. After I had been in AA for some time, I became aware that the words of the prayer were bothering me, and he refers to the Lord's Prayer. They had a queer way of coming back to me day and night. I meditated much about them. The climax came one night as I was thanking the Lord for sobriety and many other blessings. At the point in the prayer where I recited, "And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us," I came to with a start. I recall the man who I believed had done me an injustice, and who, if he could have been reached by me, would have been throttled then and there. I had never forgiven that man for a fancied injustice, and I had sworn I never would. This was the first time I fully realized that I had been merely mouthing the words of the prayer. I no longer bear any ill will against the man, but since that night I have paid more attention to the words I say. After reading that article, there wasn't very much that I could do but get on the long-distance telephone and call my stepfather. Two AAs, 1,500 miles apart. One was 12 and another was 3. Finally taking step 9. I used to think that only God or men of cloth could arrange forgiveness. However, when I now say, "And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us," I realize how kind and generous God is, and how abundantly he hasn't endowed us with the ability to forgive each other. Unfortunately, however, this is not a problem, and this is not a program for those who need it. We cannot go into bars and drag them off of the bar stool. But fortunately, it is for those who want it. And those of us who want it will find the peace of mind, serenity, and happy living that we never thought was possible before. I have been told that there are some people here today that are new to the AA program, as well as some others who would like to know more about our way of life. In my limited way, and with your indulgence, I would like to try to explain my interpretation of our program. It is a program that has helped 300,000 despairing alcoholics, which we are told is only 5% of the alcoholic population. Now, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous consists of 12 steps or suggestions, and we believe anyone can abstain from drinking if he has a desire to do so, and we'll follow these 12 suggested steps. I would like to point out now that AA are not reformers, they are not evangelists, nor are they missionaries. They have no quarrel with liquor or the people who distill or ferment it, or even the people who sell it. Their only concern is with those who drink and drink so that their lives have become unmanageable. I would also like to draw the distinction between a drunkard and an alcoholic. A drunkard is a man who wills to drink, but is not goaded to continuous drinking by any particular compulsion. He will usually shake off the after effects and resume his normal living, giving this episode in his life no further thought. The alcoholic, on the other hand, will get just as drunk as the drunkard, but he does not stop drinking. The alcoholic has a mental obsession, a compulsion to drink, coupled with a physical allergy to alcohol. The alcoholic, plagued by remorse and shame, wills to be sober and will usually accept a way of sobriety if he finds one. Now, our first step reads, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable.
Most problem drinkers will find this step to be their most difficult hurdle. Alcoholics are proud and they are arrogant people. They have an inflated ego which makes it almost impossible for them to admit defeat in any area. Least of all to admit being conquered by alcohol. AA, however, has a simple test for alcoholism. To us, an alcoholic is one who is powerless over alcohol, whose life, domestic, business, and social has become unmanageable because of the use of alcohol. In short, an alcoholic is one who cannot control his drinking once it starts. And AA experience has shown, and it's also supported by medical testimony, that once a man slips past that invisible line separating the uncontrolled from the controlled drinking, there is no turning back. Once a person has become an alcoholic, he remains an alcoholic. There is no known cure for the disease of alcoholism, but the disease can be arrested. That it is a disease is not the finding or contention of AA alone. It is the finding of some of the most eminent medical minds in the country who have made a study of alcoholism. It is a disease just as diabetes or TB are, with a tragic difference that there is no cure, as yet no cure has been found for it. However, we did say that this disease could be arrested. And this is where AA comes in, and it begins with the very first step. Without the first step, there is no chance for recovery. It has been demonstrated over and over again that a person becomes sober and stays sober only when he is doing so for himself and for himself alone. He may live sober temporarily for the sake of his wife, his family, or through the fear of losing his job or his freedom. But unless he wants to stay sober for himself, he will not achieve sobriety. The first step is one that calls for a decision that must be made by the individual, and he must make it alone. It is not easy to admit defeat, but it is a very active admission which shows the individual has the humility and courage so necessary to be successful in AA. It calls for honest thinking and honest evaluation and sincerity of purpose. For years we have said, I can stop drinking anytime I want to. For years we have believed that sobriety was just around the corner. Tragically enough, we never rounded that corner. And we suddenly discovered to our dismay that we could just not quit. This brings us to the fork in the road, and we must either honestly admit that we have a problem or sink deeper and deeper into an alcoholic hole. If we refuse to admit that we have a problem, nothing can be done. If we do admit it, then the way is clear. In AA, we understand the confusion, the torture, the shame and the despair that makes the life of an alcoholic a daily horror. We know that for him there are only three ultimate outs: out of mind, out of window, or sobriety. The way to sobriety and happy sobriety is wide open. It makes no difference how long a person has been drinking. No one has the right to despair. And there is no need to despair. There is a way out that is practical and it's sane. A way that leads to peace of mind and to soul, as well as to sobriety. As we have said, the AA program is based on 12 suggested steps of recovery. The first of which reads, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. When an alcoholic has made this admission, it would seem only natural that his next decision would be to do something about it. In the second and third steps, he finds the suggested means to a solution. The second step reads, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And the third, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it. I should state right now that AA is not a religion. It does not subscribe to any religion. It does not bar any religion, but welcomes all who seek sobriety, regardless of any particular religion or no religion at all. But the program does have a spiritual faith, and it is this faith that I would like to discuss at this point. When we speak of the higher power, as we understand it, we mean just that. AA offers no rich definition, and each member works out his own conception of that higher power. It is only natural, of course, that those members with a formal religion retain or return to the concept they formulated as a result of their particular training. Since all the personal efforts of the alcoholic, all the resources of medical aid, all the advice and pleadings of his friends and associates have proved of no avail, he has but two choices. One of them would be the road to despair. The other road must lead to the conviction that there must be a power outside and greater than himself or others that can resolve his problem, a power that can restore him to normal ways of living, as suggested in the second step. The alcoholic who has been able to make the decision required in the first step and who earnestly desires to reorganize his life on a completely non-alcoholic basis must make a complete surrender to the principles involved in these second and third steps. In short, the decision to turn our will and our lives over to God as we understood him must be acted upon. The third step is one of the most basic and important steps of the entire program. Many beginners have difficulty in this. Some give up the program because of it. Others run into endless grief by attempting to ignore it. From our own personal experience and observation of others with similar experiences, it might be recommended to all who do have difficulty with this step that they keep an open mind on its consequences. It is entirely possible that our basic personality faults may be the stumbling block to complete acceptance and surrender. We ask the beginners to fly blind, to hold fast, to have faith in us at least, since we are concrete evidence that the program will work. Time is a great healer, not only of physical breakage and material disruptions, but also of spiritual wounds. Among the personality faults of an alcoholic standing in the way of proper spiritual adjustment is his lack of self-assurance or self-reliance and his tendency to lean on others for support. His concept of God should not be the power to lean on as a child leans on his father or mother. For many years, we have used alcohol as a crutch, and we must be careful that we don't invent an easy solution to free us from the burden of making our own decisions. We may be prone to look upon God as a sort of a spiritual Santa Claus, who will deal out favors merely for the asking. We must be sensible, and our faith must tell us that God will do his part if we do ours. We may also be inclined to expect some sort of a miracle in the way of spiritual regeneration. And when no sign of divine intervention results from our earnest prayers, we are apt to become discouraged. We must not expect a miracle to be foreign to us from without, lifting us above our fears and our doubts. The miracle will come, but it will come from within, not without. The leaning idea of let George do it, or let God do it,
It won't work. We must do it.
At least we must take the initial step of surrender and place our faith in a power greater than ourselves and then cooperate with that power. Closely allied with a lack of self-reliance is the common alcoholic fall of inertia or apathy. The old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, certainly applies to us alcoholics. We go strong on daydreams and wishful thinking. We have always had high ideals and have always intended to live better. But getting started was another matter. It is not sufficient to acknowledge a belief in a higher power or God. To obtain success, we must start living the program. Action is the important thing. Wishful thinking and agreement won't do the trick. Now, once we have made the surrender and reached the conviction that a power greater than ourselves can and will help us, we must be on guard against our old thinking patterns and our reaction. One of our most common faults is impatience. We naturally want to get ahead fast, to hurry back, without realizing that we have been a hell of a time, lifetime arriving at the mess that we're in. We have always wanted to accomplish things in a big way and have had a tendency to ignore trifles, the little step-by-step things of ordinary life. We must realize that not everything can be done at once. We must face first things first and face every bit of reality as it arrives. We must guard against the urge to return to the driver's seat. And definitely, we must live our lives one day at a time. To an alcoholic, the thought of quitting drinking any length of time is frightening. The thought of quitting drinking forever is terrifying. It is, isn't it? Every successful AA lived his life one day at a time. He stays dry just for today. What happened yesterday is past and cannot be changed, and tomorrow has not come. It may never come at all. Tomorrow does not belong to us. All we have is today. Now, no one can carry the burdens of the past or all the possible burdens of the future, plus the burdens of the current day. But anyone can carry the burdens of one day. No one can carry a plank 365 feet long. But anyone can carry a plank 1 foot long 365 times. Each morning, the member of Alcoholics Anonymous says, "Please, God, keep me dry today." And each night, says, "Thanks, God, for keeping me sober today." These are our expressions of humility and faith. They are the keynote of our surrender to victory. As we continue our sobriety on these 24-hour programs, great personality changes do take place. We replace pride with humility, fear with courage, despair with faith, envy with tolerance, and hatred with charity. We must want to give the better side of our nature a chance to splurge. We even discover that our misspent years need not be wasted. Certainly the experience of our past are now invaluable in our efforts to be helpful to other alcoholics who want our help. Instead of feeling remorseful and full of self-pity, we can translate them into deep-seated understanding and love for other alcoholics. We must live life up to the hilt in a constructive, creative way. And we must trust God implicitly. Sobriety without peace of mind would have little meaning. AA offers us both. If we fail to achieve either or both, the fault does not lie with the higher power, but with us. There are certain fundamental qualities that are essential in an alcoholic if he wishes to cope with his problem successfully. These qualities may have been dormant for years, but they must be sparked back to life. And the alcoholic must cooperate if he wishes to fan this spark into a flame with sufficient potency to weather the stormy drafts he most certainly will encounter. I have tried during the past 7 years to learn by experience and through the experience of others what would be the essential thought and action required for a person who has admitted that he is an alcoholic. In my opinion, the entire 12-step program of AA has its basis in humility. Without humility, the program would merely be a continuation of life and of shame and hypocrisy. Without humility, we offer only lip service to this program, an empty collection of words ineffective in life. Humility might be defined as an acceptance of truth. The opposite, of course, would consist of arrogance or pride, and pride is nothing but a lie or an exaggerated opinion of oneself. That is one reason why an alcoholic is usually very flipped with the truth. One filled with false pride will find it difficult to accept the AA program, because when he faces the 12 steps, he faces the truth. And truth is something he seldom admits. An alcoholic has acquired a frustrated personality. Hence, the first step in a program which calls for admission of being an alcoholic, an admission that his life had become unmanageable because of alcohol, usually floors him. It becomes the biggest obstacle to the AA prospect, and yet it is the most important step in the entire program. The most important step, because without the first step, there can be no succeeding steps. And not only if he does admit his problem in the first step, the other 11 steps become a necessity. Many of the difficulties of the program are due to the fact that the individual will not admit, without any reservation, that he is powerless over alcohol and that his life has become unmanageable. This is merely saying that he refuses to face the truth, or in other words, refuses to practice humility. I feel that an individual with a serious drinking problem does usually realize in his intermittent moments of clear thinking that he is an alcoholic. But making the admission is often bitter gall. Yet, if we substitute complete honesty for pride and arrogance, it should not be difficult. And what could be better common sense than facing a fact rather than shying away from it? An honest man is always practical, and facing facts is always practical. An alcoholic must learn to evaluate things in their proper perspective and true relationship. Humility we maintain as truth, and pride as a lie. Until an attitude of humble estimation of oneself is achieved, no one will receive contented sobriety. The self-adopted but ill-covering cloak of pride must be shed. Yes, when we shed the cloak of arrogance and pride, then we can begin. No man has ever solved a problem, mathematical, human, social, financial, or spiritual, without a complete, honest approach. A fearless facing of the facts. Honest thoughts and honest actions are shunned by every alcoholic, because their acceptance and practice would demand an entirely new mode of living. Honest thinking would compel him to admit that he had fouled up the mental, physical, and moral gears of his operation. And honest action would mean he was actually seeking a corrective solution. But every alcoholic is proud, too proud to admit that he's wrong, and too proud to ask anyone for help. Asking for help, of course, would be an admission that he would be something less than capable of handling his own affairs. Now, the alcoholic, with all his deceit, his evasiveness, and his trickery, may confound the uninitiated layman. But you know, there is one person to whom all his pretensions are old stuff, and that person is the member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no excuse for every drinking that a seasoned member of AA has not heard. He has more than heard them, he has used them all himself, with a few special prizes when it's usually thrown in. When a prospect comes up with a rationalized excuse for a binge, a member of AA can match it with a dozen out of his own experience, sounding even more rational. Now, an unexpected counterattack such as this will put the prospect on the defensive, and he'll immediately go into that old song and dance on how nobody understands him and the terrible battle that he is waging with the bottle. The AA listener will be sympathetic, but not overwhelmed. He will pick up the story and tell it ahead of his jittery friend, usually. He will recall the bottles he hid in every conceivable and unconceivable hiding place. He'll admit sneaking out during the day for a quickie. He will list all the jobs he has held and lost. He'll recall the countless mornings that he waited for the earliest tavern to open. He'll show how he used to try to hoist that first one when his hand was so dirty that he couldn't even find his mouth. Now, when an alcoholic hears such a straightforward story of self-accusation from a person who is now conceitedly sober, who once followed his own drinking patterns, he's getting what may be his first lesson in complete honesty. He then realizes that he is talking to his own kind of man. A bridge of mutual confidence has been built. The gap which has baffled family, friends, doctors, ministers, or priests has been closed. An important contact has been made, and the spark of humility and innate sense of honesty has been fanned back to life. First things first, once more makes sense. From now on, a sane way of living can be visualized. A new AA baby is born, and a new man steps out into a better world. Yes, it is a new man, and it is a new world. But there is also danger. Old habit patterns cannot be destroyed by mere resolutions. New ways are unknown ways, and a new path does not present the old familiar footing. The needs of an alcoholic emerging from years of frustrated living are numerous. And the satisfaction of those needs often offers complex problems. But today, we will not refer to those needs which are purely material, physical, or financial. We will refer instead to the need for human understanding. You will find this understanding among his fellow people in AA. But how about the other segment of the public which does not and probably cannot understand his problem? The alcoholic once wore a shield of arrogance and pride which could not be dented by the scoffing or taunting of his alleged superior mortal, or even by the lament or tears of his family and friends. But now, stripped of his former defensive armor, he confronts a hostile world, sensitive, bewildered, frightened, clothed only in the thin silk of resolution. There's little reason to believe that he will be accepted on equal terms by his ever normal brethren, nor does he demand such acceptance. But what does he deserve? When the great injunction that we love our neighbor as ourselves was given us, were there any qualifications attached? We find no descriptive adjective in front of the word neighbor. It does not say good neighbor, or bad neighbor. It doesn't say white neighbor or black neighbor, rich neighbor or learned neighbor. It does not say good or bad neighbor, it just says neighbor. Now, since love is best expressed in service, what greater service can we give than helping someone more unfortunate than ourselves to begin and maintain a normal way of living? The material aspects of service are not to be disdained, but the greater service is the kindly hand which keeps a fellow being and helps him to ascend that ladder of moral and spiritual regeneration. We can all help the alcoholic who has the moral courage to accept a new way of life. And always be mindful of the verse of Edward Markham, which reads, "There is a destiny that makes us brothers. None goes his way alone. All that we send into the lives of others comes back into our own." There we have it, ladies and gentlemen. The three keystones of AA: honesty, humility, and love. How can we live? God love you all.